hosts Maya Monell and Aaron Papworth, founders of the Navit Money app, the money management app that uses behavioral science to foster financial wellness. On the fourth episode of the Navit podcast, Aaron and I sat down with financial guru, entrepreneur, and our dear friend, Jen Zappel. Jen's back with us today to talk about all things ESG, or that not so new but oh so trendy acronym used to describe a company's dedication to doing well and doing good. Let's dive in. Jen, welcome back to the show. For those of our listeners who are less familiar with your work, you want to give us a quick recap of what you do at Uter Wealth?
Yes. We are a comprehensive financial planning firm. So our two main service offerings are flat fee for service plans, where we just help people be confident in their financial decisions, right? Like, show me everything you have today. Show me what you want to do. And we'll take you through all the steps on making smart financial decisions that you're happy with. And then the other is investment management. So we do build and manage investment portfolios.
I love it. So if you are in a position to get your mind right around money and start growing wealth like you mean it, that used to be our tagline. I always loved it. Hit up Jen. We will give you all of the ways to do so at the end of the episode. But Jen, I feel like is this your third episode with the Navit ladies? Because are you just going to come on weekly now?
Can I? Because you guys are just, please. This is fun. I mean,
please. That's the point about money.
You all can't see Jen, yes, but she is repping our I'll Take It From Here hat and looking so bomb doing it. So I'm really excited about this episode.
Yeah, I feel like this hat is particularly on point for this episode.
Definitely.
But yeah, no, we recorded one other episode, but we had so much to say that we broke it into two episodes.
Yes, and wasn't I on yours?
That's correct.
We've done this a couple times. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And you'll have to come back. We'll just have to, you know, be regular guests.
Reoccurring.
And I'm going to have to crash. Yeah. Well, okay. Well, we'll dive right into the topic today because I think at least Jen and I are very excited and maybe even a little riled up about the topic. So today we're going to chat about our not so favorite little three-letter acronym meant to illustrate publicly traded companies that supposedly do well and do good, otherwise known as ESG investments, or environmental, social, and corporate governance investments. So Jen, give us some context. Why do they exist? How can we incorporate them into our own investment thesis? What's the deal with ESG?
What is the deal with ESG? Well, I like to start with saying this acronym has become mainstream, but it is not new.
No.
I feel like what's new is for people to actually ask about and care about what they're investing in. Mm-hmm. What's new is not knowing, right? What's new is not knowing what we were invested in. And I think the invention of mutual funds and exchange traded funds had really facilitated that, right? You're not buying a company anymore. You're buying a basket of companies through a fund manager. So I love Michael Pollan. This is an aside, but it's related. Michael Pollan writes about food, right? Mm-hmm. And in one of his books, he talks about how when food became an industry and the larger it got, the further away you got from the producer and the farmer and the less accountability there was, right? Mm-hmm. And so he talks about when you lived in a community and you went to the butcher, like everybody knew the butcher and the butcher knew you. So the butcher wasn't going to sell you bad meat because he knew your family. And he didn't want to like poison his neighbor, right? So the further away we got from that, the less accountability there was. And our financial system's the same, right? We've gotten so far away from I'm buying X or Y company, so I know a lot about that company and why I'm buying it. We're so far removed from it, there's a lot less accountability. So sorry to digress.
No, you're not digressing. And I promise I won't also equally digress. But that is the ultimate core social value that drives behavioral change and science in the peer-to-peer education side of things that we use, you know, like seeing other people managing money, people like you managing money gives you a context and a reference. And then also it's how peer-to-peer lending works, right? It's like how you are more likely to pay a loan back when you know the people that lent you the money, as opposed to this, like, you know, existential bank that like gave you money, right? So it's like, it's all, that's all, it's a core fiber of the human experience.
Yes. Yes. Agreed.
And I, well, why I love continue.
You guys.
Well, and I also, I want to jump on something that you said, because I totally get where you're coming at, and I agree in that we now know less and less about what companies we're investing in, which just inherently does feel ironic, right? When we have the likes of Robinhood and retail investing that allows us to pick fractional shares of public companies, right? So it's like we have overexposure in, to some extent, and then we have mass underexposure to, frankly, the mass amount of our, at least our investments, right? Like most people do invest in baskets now. So, you know, what little extra you might have, you'd play around on Robinhood or Public or any of these other picking companies, right?
Right.
Which I think it's so interesting. Yeah. So why do they exist? Like why do we need, why do we, I'm air quoting, need ESG as a mechanism of evaluating investments?
Well, they, ESG, and sometimes you still see it called socially responsible investing or SRI. We're getting away from that language more and more, right? And ESG is kind of becoming the predominant defining vernacular. But it's, I would say most of what you would find about why we have it really came more from religious, organized religious roots. So think about, you know, a Catholic church investing in tobacco or pornography or gambling, right? Things like that. Mm-hmm. So for a long time, religious organizations have been very particular about where they're investing and where they're not investing. And then it became more popular with social issues in the 60s and 70s with people boycotting things that were supporting the Vietnam War, as an example. Mm-hmm. And so things have really been, I mean, like I said, ESG investing has been around for a really long time. The last 5 years, it's become mainstream, which is like, this is why I'm having this conversation with you guys. It's like, we're finally becoming mainstream. Anytime somebody says like it's a trend or a fad, and there are still people out there who think this is a trend, which boggles my mind. $1 in $4 that's invested today is in some kind of ESG strategy. That's not a trend.
That's amazing. No, of course not. And if you know anything about the millennial generation and Gen Z, you have to know that that's not changing anytime soon. That's only going to get bigger.
Yep.
Yeah. So previously, how did like said church, or I know this, there's a very strict Muslim investment approach, right? And they always have a hard time finding things that they can and can't invest in. But so how would prior to our current situation, how would people like that church been able to find these said, examples of what they can invest in? Also, so, by the way, can we just say why? Like, churches are investing, y'all. Like, they make money too. Like, there's some irony there.
Yeah. well, and the founder, John Wesley, the founder of the Methodist Church, was very outspoken about how to use money. You know, he had a lot of sermons and teachings around the source of money being God and you being accountable to God for how you're using and spending your money.
Yes.
So, So this has been, that's what I'm saying. This is not new, right? Investing in alignment with your values is not a new concept. And actually, I think we do a little bit as an industry, do a little bit of disservice by saying in alignment with your values, because ESG is just, these are issues that are important for humanity at large and in general, right? It's not a values thing. This is like a good for everybody thing. Mm-hmm. Having sustainable practices around the environment is good for everybody. It's good for individuals. It's good for communities. It's good for business. So I'm sorry, I digressed a little bit there. What was the question?
Well, the question is, you know, why essentially do we need a way to identify investments that specifically adhere to, and I guess maybe what are they? Like, what are the barriers of ESG? What constitutes an ESG investment, you know, from a regular one?
It's a big question. I'll try to be succinct in my answer. And I think, Erin, your question was, how did people find them back in the day? So I'll answer both of your questions here. One is that the way to find them, there's essentially four different approaches that you can take today. And for a long time, the only approach you had was what's called exclusionary, which just meant we're just not going to invest, essentially boycott. I'm not going to invest in companies that are doing things that are, you know, egregiously different from what I believe in. Mm-hmm. The Catholic Church not investing in pornography, right, as an example. So exclusionary was the primary mode of investing for the longest time. Today, there are four different approaches. So exclusionary is still one. And one of your guys' questions was, how do we know if we're really investing in an ESG fund or just something that's kind of labeled ESG? And I have a funny story around that. I went to, there's a money manager that I really liked their approach and their funds. And I'm like, oh, you have an ESG lineup. I'm so like delighted to hear that. Can I read your literature around your ESG lineup? And when they sent me the literature, they have an exclusionary approach. They only had an exclusionary approach and they had 9 exclusions, and 7 of the 9 exclusions were things that I would call, you know, like more of a Catholic screening process. No weapons, no gambling, no tobacco, no pornography, no stem cell research, no funding abortions or of anything that would possibly be related to abortions. So 7 of the 9 were along those lines, and 2 of the 9 were around being environmentally friendly. And so, you know, in my personal value system or my priorities, like, that's not something that I would consider ESG, right? I would consider that much more of a religious framework than I would an ESG framework. So the E stands for environmental. And environmental, it's measuring things like air emissions and air quality, natural resource and land use, water usage, hazardous materials. So things that are to conserve and protect the natural environment. Social is the S. S stands for social. So that is impact on the local community, equal employment opportunities, healthcare, education, housing, things like that. And then governance are things like, what's the makeup of the board? Is it an independent board, or are there conflicts of interest on your members of your board? Is the board diverse in gender and race? Executive pay versus employee pay. So things like that. Are we how transparent are you in your business practices and leadership and decision making? So that's what the ESG stands for. And so, like I said, when that fund manager said we have ESG funds and that was their definition of funds, I said, okay, thank you. And I think I will pass here personally. So exclusionary is one. The other approach to be able to invest in ESG funds is an integrated approach. And what that looks like is more along the lines of traditional financial evaluation. A fund manager or an asset manager will look at a company and say, okay, this is what their financials look like. Are they healthy financially? And we're also going to look at these ESG components and say, are they healthy from an ESG standpoint? Do they have a diverse board? Do they have good corporate governance? Are they making good social and environmental impacts? So that's an integrated approach. And each of these kind of like exclusionary is, you know, base level. Right. Integrated is a little bit better, right? The next two are my favorite places to live. The next level is advocacy. Example here. So most of your listeners have heard of Vanguard, I imagine. And if they haven't, we can also throw BlackRock into the mix. BlackRock is the largest fund manager in the world. when it comes to voting their proxies, so the submitting votes when these companies have shareholder meetings annually, Vanguard and BlackRock particularly voted in alignment with managers on a lot of these ESG issues. In other words, if a shareholder resolution was put forth to, let's say, disclose median gender pay, something like that, those two fund families voted with management to oppose a measure like that. And so they, I would say, could do better. They're still not doing, they're not doing nothing, but they still have room to do better. And the final approach for ESG investing is impact investing. And that is specifically putting your money to things that are trying to make progress in these areas. An example could be a mutual fund that's investing in new water technologies. So how do we do better with our water usage, use less water, use it in a more environmentally friendly way? Companies that are innovating around those efforts. I'll pause because that was a lot.
No, first of all, thank you for defining the four different approaches. I think that that's really important because I think that as ESG, personally, I've seen as ESG becomes a more mass consumed acronym around your investing strategy, so too has it become, I think, interchanged, wrongfully so, with impact. And I really like how you just describe the difference, right? And I think that there's a, you know, certainly a question we get, or at least I've seen and been asked quite a few times, is how do you evaluate your like level of impact priority, right? So if you take that conservation lens, right, like that you just spoke to, well, what if the kind of governance of some of those organizations is less up to par than say other groups that are more focused on government governance and maybe have less to do with climate or, you know, conservation.
Well, so much of the challenge is really defining is defining any of these terms, right? How do we define environmental impact? And SASB, S-A-S-B, sustainability, I don't know, I'm going to mess up the acronym. They're really publishing and putting out Sustainability Accountability Standards Board. They're really, that is their work. Their work is really defining how do we measure these things, how do we define them, and how do companies report on them. So they're really kind of acting as that intermediary between boards and shareholders, and like, let's come together and how do we define and measure these things. And something that they do very well is they're showing companies what the financial impact of these types of decisions are. But if you're listening to the show and like your question, Maya, you're like, how do we know? It's hard. I mean, there's no such thing as a perfect company. You know, there's companies.
You mean Navit's not a perfect company? I'm
shocked. Just thinking of all of our pain points.
Who wants to strive for perfection? I mean, that's just not human.
As good as we can get. That's what you're saying. Yes.
But the two best resources for that, Morningstar actually does a great job of rating both companies and funds in their ESG standards. So you can do homework on Morningstar. You can input a company or a fund ticker, and they will kind of, they have a globe standard, like where do they fall on the ESG rating. My other favorite is, if you haven't visited, if you're interested in the subject and you haven't visited asyousow.org, it's a tremendous resource. So asyousow.org, they have a whole section on invest in your values. And on that page for invest in your values, you can click on fossil free funds, gender equity funds, gun free funds, deforestation funds, tobacco-free funds, prison-free funds. So in each of those pages, you can type in your holding or your company, and it will give you a very detailed qualitative analysis, quantitative and qualitative analysis as to what that company, how much is invested. If you guys want to, we can run an example. It'd be kind of fun.
Please do. But yes, but I want to just, in summary of what you're telling me, is basically you as an individual investor have to create your standards for ESG. That's which is something I'm learning from you. I did not realize that. I knew that there weren't great standards, but you're actually telling me I have to do the work myself to define where I want to invest, where I don't want to invest. And I can't just go to Vanguard and do the ESG funds and think that that is in line with my values, right? And so I actually have to do work here.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes. And what I will say is if you go to Vanguard and you choose a fund that just has the ESG slapped on next to it, Vanguard has 5 ESG funds. 4 of the 5 are exclusionary in their approach. 1 is integrated. So they're kind of at the first 2 levels. And what I would say to that is that's still better than not investing in the ESG fund, because what I believe is every dollar that goes into a fund that has the ESG acronym on it is a signal to the market at large. People care about this. We want yep. this.
We yes. want better.
So I think to answer your question, Aaron, you can be as involved in this as you want to be. And if you're just starting out as, I'm time constrained and this is not an interesting subject to me, don't feel bad about going to Vanguard and investing in the ESG, one of the ESG strategies. But if you really want to know and you want to make an impact, then yeah, you're going to have to do a little bit of digging.
And so here, even on that side, so if you go to Vanguard and you have those, you said 5 options, 3 or 4, did you say 4 exclusionary, 1 yeah. is integrated? How would you even know that?
They do a great job of publishing that on their site. Yeah.
They do a good job. Okay. All right. So at least the information at baseline yes. is there. And now you have advocacy. I mean, Morningstar, these extracurricular, I think we actually even had someone on the, someone else on the podcast, Maya, gave us this, I think Chelsea gave us, these websites, at least at minimum the website. So
a lot in the links, yeah.
Yeah. So Jen, what do you, okay. The first step is to decide you want to invest. The second is to decide you want to invest in ESG. The third step is to define what that mm-hmm. means to you. Mm-hmm. And I really like that breakdown of the 4. So let's say you get to the advocacy and the last one was, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. impact. Now it's a step of opening some mm-hmm. sort of account, like a brokerage. It's talking to a CFP like yourself. I love fee-only CFPs. That's why we love you so much. Because if you can't afford, you can just do a one-off conversation. And then you can open a brokerage account. Can you do it on the Publix and the Robinhoods of the world? Or what would you suggest there?
If you go to As You Sow, you can look up by company of what their impact is. And what I like about their site, when they say invest in your values, they're kind of forcing you, the way they have it set up is they're kind of forcing you to pick your, your biggest value set, right? Is it fossil free? Is it gender diversity or gender equity? Is it prison systems? And you can type in the company there and then it will give them a grade. And what the other thing they do that's pretty cool is they show kind of the trend of the company over time, because like all things, these evolve. So there are companies that improve over time and there are some companies that slip in their standards over time. So Tesla is an example. I think they were rated B for a long time and they do like a traditional ABC kind of grade scale, ABCD. And Tesla was towards the top for a while and they just slipped. Maybe it was A and they slipped to B. So it's cool that they kind of track over time.
I would like to know more about how you advise mm-hmm. or coach a client through their own impact metrics, right? Like you're talking about on As You Sow, for example, right? Like I would imagine that some people feel torn between a couple of different areas that they feel closest to. And so how can you then, I don't now want to say integrated, but how can you form kind of a complete approach to their own impact thesis and investing thesis based on, say, a couple of different measurements and as I tack on maybe like sub A question to this, how do you also then bring like two stakeholders, say in a joint account, together to that same kind of investment strategy?
Really great question. I haven't thought through, you know, because the nature of what I do is I build these portfolios. So our approach, which could be adopted at an individual level, but what we do when we design a portfolio is we still lead with proper asset allocation. So, you know, depending on the risk and depending on the investment objective, what's the right amount of stocks, bonds, international exposure, small, medium, mid-cap exposure. So we still start at like the very basic fundamental investment approach. And then we try to find holdings in those areas of asset allocation for us that are either advocacy or impact strategies. And as it sits today, we cannot fill every space in a good diversified portfolio with an advocacy or impact strategy.
Because
they either don't exist or we don't know that they exist. So there's no, we don't know necessarily what the reporting is. You know, we don't know the standards for reporting aren't there. So we can't see what their environmental impact is, as an example. We can take an advocacy approach in that we can vote proxies and things like that. So we can be advocates, but we don't know if the company itself, the holding itself, is necessarily ESG focused or ESG priority.
Because you don't have to report on these measurements, which is getting back to that point, right? And this is the problem with ESG. Like, you can say it, but every single company has its own measurement for ESG success.
Yep, that's exactly right.
For metric.
And regulatory world, I was going to ask, I have two questions. One is, I want to know the returns and like this false narrative that has been perpetuated historically that ESG doesn't give returns like the other ones. And two, where are the regulators on this? So I know those are
they're totally different questions, though. They're closely related, more closely related than I would like them to be. The narrative that ESG funds do not perform as well inside the industry is almost over. So it's probably still very pervasive out in the public, right? Like, there's probably still a huge misconception that if you invest this way, you have to forego returns. There's been enough studies now to debunk that. That's not the case. So internally, inside the industry, the largest headwind now is more, and this goes to the second part of your question, Aaron, is more around the regulatory field. And the biggest hurdle right now for ESG investing is that there's a lot of talk about it not being you're foregoing your fiduciary responsibility and pushing a political agenda or a pet agenda.
Wait, I'm sorry.
Right?
The regulators are saying that by you choosing to invest in ESG, whatever that is in your category, because there's no standardization, you're perpetuating
that's their political fear. Agenda? Their fear is that. Yeah. They're slowly buying into this. But DOL ruling in October is just an example of that. So one of the questions you guys had was, why aren't there more options in 401k accounts? Well, 401k funds aren't usually thought leaders on any kind of investment decisions. They usually lag behind. So this isn't a big surprise. The other challenge with 401k funds is that they are regulated. There's an extra layer of regulation on them because they fall under the Department of Labor. So October of 2020, DOL passed a ruling that requested that 401k providers focus on price and performance of funds, that anything beyond price and performance, you know, is a potential distraction from the criteria that they should be considering.
Okay. So now that that, I mean, so what happens now? I mean, why is that the case? Like, obviously that's to de-risk, you know, your exposure, but I still don't understand why this has become such a policy driven initiative, like why this is, or maybe a regulatory initiative by policymakers to exclude the masses from, you know, frankly, putting their money into impact, you know, their own personal impact drivers.
Yeah. I don't think that I can argue. I mean, most of the time I can make counter arguments and see different perspectives. Yeah. This one's tough for me too. So
would you say then the strategy is to say, like, okay, fine, our 401ks are F tier. Is this when, maybe this is why we've seen such an uptick in retail, you know, retail trading and kind of day trading, right? Where it's like we can now individually pick at the palm of our hands. And I do some tiny trading on Public, so I know that they at least, as per what you were discussing earlier with As You Sow, like you can go in and see, okay, what are the kinds of impact issues or interests that you have? And you can pick individual tickers based on that. I imagine Robinhood has the same, I'm not sure. So, you know, have you had either discussions with friends, clients, you know, whomever, that like this is kind of the way forward? It's to actually move us away from baskets and into individual picking when we can to try and pick up the slack. And of course, this is for, you know, for folks that want to invest, but, you know, have to also live within their means.
So there still is plenty to be hopeful for. The SEC just created a task force, an ESG task force. So that's right, a signal that this isn't going away, that it's going to become, you know, a part of the fabric of their daily operations. The state of Illinois just passed legislation that requires all state-funded programs to make ESG considerations when they're making investment decisions. So, you know, while today there might not be a lot of choices within 401k, I do see moving forward in the future, there will be a lot more options. And even as we sit here today, if you don't have ESG options in your 401k and you want them, the few things you can do is contact your human resources department or your leadership department, let them know that you'd like to see them. They can talk to the plan administrators and say the same, that they're getting a lot of requests for that. That will help move things along. A lot of larger plans also, so if you work for larger companies, I worked for MetLife for a period of time, and they had an option where you could do a self-directed account for your 401k. So you didn't necessarily have to invest in the handful of fund choices they had. You could take your 401k contribution and open a brokerage account, and then you could buy any holding in that account that the brokerage account would allow.
I love it. And I love to end these episodes letting everybody know that hope is not lost. So, Chet, thank you for that. Because, you know, I think that this has become, unfortunately, as ESG has become more mainstream, it's become a topic that that becomes more and more clouded by, you know, for all the reasons we've cited and you've cited so accurately around policy, you know, around different people's agendas, around different people's giving or investing theses. I think it's really good to see that the industry is by and large coming around to this idea that companies can do well and also do good. And we are our strongest advocates and our money's strongest advocates too. So I'm really excited to hear that we're moving the needle forward there. Jen Sappel, thank you so much for joining us. As always, before we get into our last segment of rapid fire questions, do you want to tell everybody where they can find you and reach out and listen to your own podcast?
Sure. You find us at our website, utorwealth.com. That's UTOR wealth. Utor is Latin for to use, to employ, and to enjoy. So that's what we help our clients with. That's the whole purpose of our firm, is how do you use money to build a meaningful life that you can enjoy. And you can find our podcast there. My podcast is Money Untabooed. It's on all the podcast, anywhere you listen to your podcast, you should find it. I've had the privilege of having Aaron on. Maya, we're going to have to do the threesome here. We're going to have us.
I know. On anytime.
Yeah, we'll get that booked. And I would encourage anybody, if you're considering talking to a professional like me, whether it's me or anybody else, take advantage of the complimentary consultation. You can book on our website, a free 30-minute session, and I'm happy, even if we're not a good fit, to point you in the right direction.
Thank you so much, Jen. You've been such a great kind of advocate and advisor and coach of even Aaron and I. So we cannot recommend your team more. And with that, let's get into the last 2 minutes here of our rapid fire questions. You've answered them before, but maybe we'll get some different answers from you in this season. Of course, they are quick and impactful, just like signing up for Navit. So shameless plug-in, go download the app if you have not already on any app store. Jen, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. First, what money stereotype do you think society must overcome?
That money is a tool. We like to blame tools, but if you look at it like a tool, so like your car is a tool or any other tool, you're the driver of the tool.
Love that. It was Jen, mind you, who told me that it's not an emergency fund, it's an opportunity fund. And I have carried that with me. It's just a tool. And lastly, when was the last time you navved something and how did you do it?
Whew. that's a good question. Right now I'm in the midst of navigating special needs for my niece and getting her resources that she needs. And what I have learned is that with autism, you get a diagnosis and they just say, okay, we recommend these 5 therapies. Good luck. I'm in the midst of navigating that. And what I have learned in this stage of my life, I got to say, it's taken a long time, but what I've learned is you just have to ask for help a lot. And when you do, and when you do it sooner, you'll come to find your answers a lot more efficiently than if you try to navigate things on your own.
I could not agree more. Well, Jen, thank you again so much for joining us. Wishing you so well, and we can't wait to have you on again soon.
It's always a pleasure joining you guys. I love the work you're doing. So however I can help, I'm happy.
Thanks, Jen. Good luck with your niece. Bye-bye.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Care to continue the convo? You can connect with fellow navigators in the app or on our Let's Navit Facebook page. Oh, and be sure to get social with us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Let's Navit. That's LetsNavit. And finally, wherever you're listening to this podcast, it would really help us if you would take a minute to rate, review, and subscribe. That's it for today's episode. Until next time,
let's nab it!